little hell.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, Jack Spencer, and our special guest this week, Angela Vasquez-Drew. Thank you so much for joining us at MERS World Headquarters.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Also, thanks for nailing my last name. I really appreciate that.
I finally said it correctly.
We've only known each other for like 1,000 years, so.
Yeah, I can finally nail the French pronunciation. It was easier when it was a different name, but.
I know. That's not a good enough reason to keep it.
I know, it's not.
Just save the tape and then use it over and over again. You don't have to get it right again.
Also, a little later in the podcast, trucker Randy Bishop, a conservative talk show host up in northern Michigan, former chair of the Antrim County Republican Party, and the impetus behind the sanctuary county resolutions that have been going on up there regarding the Second Amendment. But first, we have some things to talk about here. Angela, you've been involved maybe kicking up the social media storm against Joel Ferguson, the Michigan State University trustee, who is looking at possibly running again, but he's run sideways with folks within the Democratic Party because of his, I guess you would say, callous attitude toward the survivors of Larry Nassar. You spoke up because he donated money to the Ingham County Democrats and gave them an office down here at Rio Town, presumably to try and show that he's serious about helping Democrats and getting them elected. What's wrong with just helping out Democrats and continuing the influence that he's had?
You know, I think if the Democrats want to register themselves as the party that stands with women, that does not have an active war on women, this is a pretty no-brainer, easy way to demonstrate that. Don't take money from someone who didn't think that Larry Nassar assaulting hundreds of women at MSU and beyond was a big deal. I mean, he called it the Nassar thing and the Nassar stuff. And he actively sought to block the investigation that AG Dana Nessel was putting together. He has prioritized athletics over the safety of students since I can remember. I don't think there's any good reason to support him, and I especially don't think there's any good reason to be part of his attempt to paper over his bad record.
So this is a big conversation right now in Democratic circles, John, where you have Joel Ferguson, who's been extremely influential in Michigan State University, in particular MSU athletics, now being put under the microscope. And do they really want him to be the face of the Democratic Party? They could decide as soon as later this month at their endorsement convention.
They absolutely could. And you kind of could have seen this coming at the last over the last couple of years. There's been a lot of people very unhappy with the incumbents that sit on the MSU Board of Trustees. There's been a lot of churn there, and I'm not surprised, especially given his comments and the coverage he sort of received. He did kind of come off as almost dismissive about the whole issue.
Now, Jack, Joel Ferguson has been an extremely powerful individual, though, within Michigan State University, he has, and within Democratic politics. He's given money to numerous Democratic candidates as personal friends with Jesse Jackson, for example. And one could argue that he's got a lot of levers he can push behind the scenes and make a renomination very possible.
Well, that's where the problem comes in, is you have someone here. You would hope someone could talk to him and possibly say, Joel, the time for your long-awaited retirement has now come. But I suspect there'll be resistance, and you never know when you have that kind of influence exactly where to guess it's going to come from.
Now, Angela, there's been some talk about this endorsement convention and whether the party goes ahead and they make an endorsement for their nominee for August right now, which would pretty much put an end to it, or we continue on into the spring, into the summer, and have kind of these debates that we had back in 2018. Sam Singh, former House Minority Leader, has suggested that. Do you have a preference on that or not? What do you think should happen there?
I think it makes sense to postpone it until August to let party members in particular kind of wrap their heads around it. I mean, it's an unusual cycle as it is having the presidential, which is still very contested. I think a lot of folks didn't have the chance to organize around this the way that they would have wanted to. You know, we all have only so much time and energy in a day, giving us until August to decide what we want to do and who we want to, you know, be the face of the party and be the people who are going to, you know, drag MSU into the 21st century when it comes to reforming their campus culture. I don't think we can accomplish that in, you know, a few short weeks now.
question for you. This is a different issue than the Joel Ferguson candidacy and the MSU Board of Trustees. We talked about it a little bit in the lead up to our planning meeting today. The University of Michigan's having some of its own issues as far as the sexual abuse of student athletes, in this case the male student athletes, over a period of decades. Is it similar? Is it a problem within our universities? Speak to that.
I think that there has been, on college campuses, especially ones where there's so much revenue generated by the Big Four, Big Three sports, there's been a habit of looking the other way whenever there's anything untoward happening in the athletic department. You know, you saw it with the basketball players and Tom Izzo. You saw it with the football players and Mark D'Antonio. You see it with Nassar and the doctors and now at U of M. It's much too common an occurrence and widespread for it to be a one-off problem at one university. When we prioritize revenue sports over making sure the campus is safe, that also makes it a lot easier to ignore or deny what people are saying. You know, there was the wrestler in, 1975 who wrote a letter to his coach, and instead of taking it seriously, the coach read the letter aloud to his teammates and then kicked him off the team and pulled his scholarship. You know, granted, that's decades ago now, but that approach isn't much different. You know, the same thing happened with women on the gymnastics team. They were told if they continued with their complaints against Larry that they would be, you know, that there would be consequences, and the consequences would be for them, not him. So I think it's a broad problem, and it's something that is going to take a lot more than, you know, even lawsuits to remedy. There's going to have to be a real come to Jesus at the NCAA level when we talk about what place college sports have in colleges.
Well, I was just thinking too about what this next endorsement convention or any convention could look like, and thinking about the priority that we put on athletics. And I don't know, Jack. I mean, maybe we all put too much priority on sports and so forth, and the pressure that these coaches and players and everybody is under, and how much revenue and how much prestige comes with winning games. And
but you could put a priority on athletics and being competitive without allowing for an abusive atmosphere or that sort of thing to fester. Those sports raise a lot of money; they get a lot of attention, and that's great. But put in place administrators and coaches and trustees who actually are going to value providing a good quality human experience and not allowing that sort of thing to fester and occur.
So what type of trustee do you think would be helpful at Michigan State University, if you could just kind of create one?
You know, my ideal trustee at MSU would be a woman who has some experience either working with survivors or working in that community, having either some legal background or some on-the-ground grassroots organizing background, having some type of approach to these things that is grounded in reform and not in, you know, just being really excited to get your tickets to the trustee box for every sport. I think, you know, there's definitely folks out there looking for this candidate, and I hope that we can find them. But I do know that my ideal candidate is pretty much the polar opposite of Joel Ferguson.
I'm probably not the best person in the world to talk about the sports thing, since I'm such a cynic about it. I mean, I grew up in a home where we were so sports-oriented. In the morning before football games and basketball games on Saturday, we would be looking for things like bowling and golf and all kinds, just to see, even roller derby, just to find a sport. So I grew up with that, but to me, we've really kind of ruined the purpose of it and the spirit of it. My question on something like this with Joel Ferguson is, okay, there's this tendency, and it makes sense, okay, we've got to do something to sort of clean out and really check the old guard at these places. But is there a problem if you sort of focus on one person and that person becomes the symbol and you miss a whole lot of other people who maybe should go too?
You know, I think in a perfect world, there would be a case made for clearing out all the trustees who have made it hard for AG Nessel to do her job. Two are up right now, and the organization Reclaim MSU that's doing a lot of really good and important work on this and, you know, more generalized problems at MSU, they're calling for both Ferguson and Masalim not to run again. So I think you are absolutely right, being that Joel is an Ingham County presence and, you know, is trying to buy his way out of his problematic past. He is the focus here. But certainly there are folks who are really dedicated to making sure that, you know, over the next few years, we get folks on the board either to see the light or to quietly turn it in.
All right, we're going to turn the page now on a breaking news situation from this morning. This morning we received a PAC fundraising letter from Donna Lozinski, state representative. Her political action committee is going to be having a fundraiser later this month. That's not necessarily breaking news alert, but what is breaking news is the 35 presumably returning state House Democrats who signed on as co-chairs and co-hosts of this particular fundraiser, including Sarah Anthony and Yosef Rabi, both of whom had kind of thrown their name out there as possibilities, kind of behind the scenes as potential leadership candidates. This news then clears the way for Donna Lozinski to be the next leader of the state House Democrats, and if the Democrats take majority, would be the first female speaker of the House in the state of Michigan. I wanted to get your reaction to that, Angela.
I really am a fan of Representative Lozinski's. I like her work. I like her approach. I like her attitude. She's always struck me as very invested in the work and the issues and in, you know, being there. She doesn't so much send staff to meetings or trainings as attend them herself. And that, I think, says a lot about the way she approaches governing. But really, for the Dems, answering this question now instead of having it hanging over every single choice and interaction for the next however far away we are from the primaries and the general, that really helps settle things down. I know in the last cycle it was difficult to read every decision and every move through the lens of who was jockeying to be this, you know, the potential next speaker. So getting it done now, big fan. Donna Lozinski, big fan.
I don't think we can underscore how significant this is, because the House Democrats in particular, Jack, have not been a caucus to like to settle things early.
No, and that's why we have to put that little question mark at the end. Okay, is this really getting your ducks in order, and is there something going to come, you know, spoil it somewhere, and there's going to be battles and everything? And you have to know, if you're MERS, you're going kind of rooting for the second, because it's a better story. It's several better stories, you know, and then everybody's saying, what I love about those caucus races is everybody has more votes than there are actual people there, because
yes,
they all can say, ah, we've got all these, and they've actually been promised that, and they just have been lied to. But yeah, obviously, you're always better off getting all your ducks in order, getting everything organized ahead of time, and if that's how this actually works, then, you know, you've got a huge first step toward November.
Because what we've seen on the Republican side, John.
They nailed it. I mean, Chatfield had it pretty well sewn up, didn't he? I mean, how early did Leonard have it?
Leonard did pretty well. I think
it was pretty early in the election year, so it's a big advantage, because look, now the caucus can focus on candidate recruitment. Mm-hmm. They can focus on raising money. There's less time spent, you know, jockeying for this position. So it's not a bad thing for the caucus.
No, I would think not. It's not good for us here at MERS, because we like covering the caucus.
We want to drag out knockdown fights, the name calling, you know, get on Twitter, attack each other, you know. That's what we want.
It makes for good stories anyway. But as far as the caucus in general, I can think, well, shoot, I mean, we just remember last year with Christine Gregg and Brian Elder, that stretched out, that split the unions and organized labor from women's groups, and that wasn't necessarily very helpful. I remember Rick Hamill against Woodrow Stanley. That wasn't particularly a great election either, if I remember that right, Jack. And then we also had Andy Dillon and Meisner.
All told, either party getting their act together early or even getting it together at all, I'm against it. I mean, it's just story-wise, it's just a lot better to show them, you know.
It's got to feel good, too, though, after the last bounce they had over the whole racist charge and the kerfluffle that happened the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yes, with Representative Karen Whitson.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, and then the last thing I want to talk about, we're going to have trucker Randy Bishop on here in just a minute, and I got a lot of eye rolls when folks said that I was going to have Trucker Randy on, but I don't think it can be understated how big this movement is that he's been able to harness in regards to the Second Amendment sanctuary counties. He's been able to get movement and county commissions across the state to approve these resolutions, affirming that if there is any type of red flag legislation that is adopted, that the county prosecutor and the county sheriff does not enforce those laws, and that people's Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is protected. Jack, I mean, you gotta admit that he is really kind of captured what is powering Republican sentiment right now.
Well, what I find interesting is he gave us an example of what he's telling the average person. And of course, we in the closer to the Capitol kind of are going, well, I found that interesting. The question I really have always wanted to ask him is how his mother and father ever came up with the first name Trucker.
It really seems like it's this gun movement, though, that is giving the Republicans some hope going into 2020. This is what is exciting them right now.
Well, it's one of three issues that always seems to stir up people. I mean, you've got the pro-choice, pro-life issue. You've got guns, and you've got immigration, and it seems to be a good hot button issue. And I think even in his talk with us, he kind of hinted that it's almost like a little bit of a rally cry to get people excited and turned out for Trump.
Right. As a Democrat, Angela, are you concerned much about this or not?
It seems a little out of touch with present reality and sentiment around guns in the state and in the country. Personally, as you know, a human with a child, my daughter is 15 and she's already had, you know, two lockdown drills at school. One while she was at her 5:45 a.m. swim practice, the officials came in and pulled them out of the pool and made them leave the building. And the second in the middle of the day, and these kids were cowering in rooms and terrified. She and her classmates signed themselves out. And under the reason, it said scared. I mean, can you just imagine this? Like, these kids' names and a wall of lines that just says scared. And you have to take these things seriously, right? Because it's so easy to get a very dangerous, deadly, devastating weapon. There's always a nice academic and esoteric argument to be made about the Second Amendment rights. But where that meets babies in classrooms is a real question for me. And I think that we have to wrangle with that, and we have to start prioritizing the safety of actual living, breathing humans over someone's ideas about what they think is owed to them.
I have the same problem that I have with this issue that I have with sanctuary cities. I don't think from a Democratic standpoint it's a very good idea for any side of any issue to encourage people or to proclaim that we're going to ignore an existing adopted law. Look, if you don't like the law, run for Congress and get it changed, or run for the state house or the state senate. If the people who are duly elected and serving in the Michigan State House and Senate decide they want to adopt a red flag law, and you're a county prosecutor, you should follow that law because it's the law.
Jack, and I can't help but be impressed by the power of the Second Amendment and the gun advocates and the gun holders in the state, and the pressure and the quick pressure they were able to put on the state Senate in getting them to reject George Hartwell, to get them to say, hey, get the governor to reject Hartwell.
And he even said they're mad at Bumstead for not voting against Hartwell, and that was a very sincere vote. He knew the person personally. But the gun issue to me, I just roll my eyes all the time because I just feel that it's so much, it's like such a waste of time sometimes talking about it. If you had a Hall of Fame in the NRA, you'd have, I can't remember the first guy's name, La something or other that was the head of it. You'd probably have a shrine to him and some flowers and a little candle burning. And you'd have Charleston Heston, the other one, you know, is to another one to him showing his picture. But the big one in the center that did the most for the NRA was a guy named Barack Obama, because it scared all those people. And the sort of rhetoric we heard from on the podcast earlier, that he did more for the NRA and gun sales in this country than anybody else. So it's the counterpoint almost. And again, I try to remind people, guns are made in virtually every country on the face of the earth. It's just, to me, it's just like our experience, you know, with outlawing alcohol, with outlawing marijuana. If you act, the more you go against it, once it's in the culture, the more it's just going to be more and more people popping up. You can't stop the stuff from coming in.
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my do me no harm.
Joining us on the other end of the line now is Trucker Randy Bishop. He is a radio show host up in northern Michigan, our founding fathers. And also he is the head of an effort in northern Michigan that is now spread across the state regarding Second Amendment sanctuary counties. Thanks for joining us, Trucker.
Hey, thanks, Kyle. Appreciate you having me on. And by the way, it's your defending fathers with Trucker Randy on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. We do 97.7 FM, WCHY in Sheboygan. Our website is yourdefendingfathers.com and the TuneIn app. Capital T, capital I, one word. Download it and open it up and search for WYPV, we're your Patriot Voice. I appreciate you letting me get that plug in.
No problem. You're on Monday through Friday in the morning, correct?
Right. I'm on 9 to noon, normally live. I have Friday's show repeating in the background right now as we do this podcast with you here on Monday morning.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for taking some time here then with us this morning as we do our podcast. And Trucker, the big thing we wanted to talk to you about first is this sanctuary county proposal that has been going around the state now. How mm-hmm. Tell us how this began. What was the impetus behind this movement?
Basically, Tom Norton, who's running for 3rd congressional district in that race to replace Justin Amash, his campaign manager, Jeff Fuss, is a good friend of mine, longtime listener to my show. And we were brainstorming what issue could unite the state, get our people excited, motivated about an issue that could possibly do a couple of things. Number one, show strength in numbers. Number two, help promote getting Donald Trump reelected, getting other candidates elected that are in alignment with our staunch support of the Second Amendment. And at the same time, get our county elected officials on the record this year early during an election year. The filing deadline to replace these no voters is April 21st at 4 o'clock. And what we're finding out, Kyle, is that a lot of the local county officials, even though they've got an R behind their name, they're very reluctant to adopt our resolution. We've had problems in my own county of Antrim. They reworded our resolution at the last minute. They pulled our language out and inserted a very weak, basically reaffirmation of their oath of office. We had problems in Emmett County. We had problems in Alpena and Marquette, which we knew we were going to have problems in Marquette because they were 6 Democrats on the commissioner's boards, a Democrat sheriff, a Democrat prosecuting attorney. So we knew that was going to be a problem. We got that one out of the box right away, where they went against us. And we've been targeting these other counties, and one by one, we're up to now 22 counties out of 83 as of this past Friday. We're over 25% of the state. Jeff launched the page on Christmas Day, and right now we're over 96,000 members on the statewide page, and the county pages, he's created all 83. We have over 21,000 members on those county pages as well.
So, Trucker, tell our listeners what the resolution says. What are you asking these counties to adopt, and what has 22 county commissions adopted?
Basically, they acknowledge our Second Amendment rights, which really doesn't have a major play in this because the Second Amendment talks about a well-regulated militia, and there's some commas in there. There's some ambiguity as to what it really means. The left, the progressive, the gun grabbers think the commas mean things they don't. What we based this on was Michigan's state constitution, as amended in 1963, Article 1, Section 6, bearing of arms, quote, every person has a right to keep and bear arms for the defense of himself and the state, period. 18 words, no commas, no mention of well-regulated militia. I've been told by attorneys that this is actually the strongest language in America when it comes to a state constitution.
So why do we need this Second Amendment resolution then?
Because basically it does two things. Number one, it's symbolic. And we've had people accuse us, well, why are we passing this? This is not a law. This is not binding on anybody. It's basically symbolic. Yes, it is symbolic. Why do we, before every public meeting, recite the Pledge of Allegiance? That's symbolic. Why did our founding fathers sign the Declaration of Independence? That was symbolic. It was a document that simply said, hey, King George, we're done with you. This is symbolic in that we, the people, are basically wanting our county officials, county by county, to go on the record to basically tell us whether or not no more future infringements of our rights will be enforced in their county. And this was all triggered, Kyle, basically because of the Democrats over a year ago now, February 28, 2019, they introduced three bills in the House, three bills in the Senate that are basically red flag laws. They want mental health to be part of background checks. They want some other things in there. Then followed up by a letter signed by Governor Gretchen Whitmer on September 10th with 11 other gun-grabbing governors from around the country sent to President Trump and sent to Mitch McConnell wanting to implement red flag laws at the federal level. We started connecting the dots. We looked at Virginia. We looked at New Mexico just this past week. And we said enough is enough. We have got to be proactive in Michigan. We've got to send a message to our elected officials at the county level, our state legislature, and our governor. Enough's enough. We have been infringed upon with fingerprints and having to pay fees for CPLs, background checks. None of that's part of our Second Amendment nor our state constitution. So what we're saying is enough is enough. No more laws. You can pass whatever you want in Lansing, you can pass whatever you want in Washington, but they're not going to be enforced in our county.
And so that's what this resolution says. It asks the prosecutor and the sheriff in these counties to not prosecute any laws that would take guns out of the hands of properly registered owners.
Not only properly registered, but just citizens. And the biggest case that we've got pending right now is up in Chippewa County. Chippewa County, we have a student, his name is Lucas Gerhardt. He's 20 years old. He's a college student at Lake Superior State University. He was jailed for 83 days, Kyle. He was prosecuted with felony terrorism charges, facing 20 years in prison. The case goes to court later this month from an overzealous prosecutor that is basically prosecuting him for taking a picture of his legally owned AR-15 and putting it on his Snapchat account. That's all he did. And they, the city police of Sault Ste. Marie and this prosecutor, prosecuted this young man. He's under house arrest right now with an ankle bracelet at his father's home in Oakland County. And these laws haven't even passed in Lansing yet. They haven't even been signed into law by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, but yet we've already got some young man. His future is over. He was studying to be a police officer. He's now sitting basically in house arrest facing 20-year terrorist felony charges because of this overzealous prosecutor up in Sault Ste. Marie.
Now, this young man, though, I thought he made a statement on Snapchat that went along with that that made it appear as if he was making a threatening comment towards somebody in particular.
Have you ever shot an AR-15 rifle?
No, I have not.
You need to. And what I want you to do is after you shoot it, I want you to grab the barrel. I want you to feel how hot it is. You'll burn your fingers. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to pull your hand off really quick. His comment was this, quote, "This ought to make the snowflakes melt, eh?" And right. I mean snowflakes as in snow. That was his quote unquote on Snapchat.
Okay.
Now, does he have First Amendment rights of freedom of speech, of freedom of press? Does he have Second Amendment rights? He legally owns the gun. I mean, come on, Kyle. We have got to draw a line in the sand, and this is basically why we're doing this.
This Go is ahead, Jack Spencer, and I think it was maybe more than a year ago we had the anti-gun person on the podcast, and I kind of played the skeptic on that, coming from the position of former Senator Jones, who was against the red flag legislation. But right. So I'm going to kind of be the skeptic on the reverse on this one.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, you have this individual here you're talking about. What about the ones we've seen with the school shootings where everybody knew for 2 months ahead of time there was something wrong mentally with this person? Everybody knew and try to complain and try to do something about it, but nobody could seem to be able to do anything to get them the help they needed. Mm-hmm. What about those kind of cases? I mean, you're giving an extreme on one side. What about the extreme on the other side, where it's kind of even the family members know there's something wrong with somebody? How does this idea you have play out with a situation like that?
Bottom line is, we don't need more laws. What we need is family members who saw those posts on Facebook or social media, perhaps people at school interacting with this kid. Authorities needed to be notified, and they don't need more laws like the red flag laws that are pending in Michigan right now in a committee. What we need is local officials to be interacting with their community at the local level. They need to be talking with the parents. The parents should have contacted the police or the sheriff and said, hey, my son has this gun. These are the posts he's put on social media. I'd like you guys to come over and talk to my son. They could reach out to mental health people to talk and counsel these type of people. Here's the problem. More government is not the solution. And the fact that they want more government to be the solution infringes on our rights. In this country, let's assume half of the country is pro-gun, the other half is anti-gun. Let's take that for an assumption. What happens to our rights just because the other half of the country has their fears and their phobias? They have their concerns. Why did they not speak out? Why did they not contact the authorities? Why do we need government passing laws that affects law-abiding citizens, when in fact the family, the community, the schools could have taken care of every single one of these issues that you're talking about?
Hey, Randy, John here. Quick question. What's the largest population-wise county that's done this, and who's coming up next as far as your agenda?
I'm going to be taking the day off on Wednesday. I'm going to be on the agenda for the Grand Traverse County Board of Commissioners. I believe their population is 91,000. And I've talked to the chairman of the commissioners. I've talked to a couple of the other commissioners. And I believe they will, after hearing my arguments, they will pass it on Wednesday, March 4th, at their 8 o'clock meeting.
Up to now, though, would mm-hmm. the largest county be Monroe, maybe, or Allegan?
Monroe and perhaps Livingston. I believe they're both in the 170,000, 175,000 population range. They've adopted a resolution that was acceptable to us to deem them a sanctuary county. And I believe those are the ones downstate, correct?
This is Jack Spencer again. What kind of support or pushback are you having from local law enforcement? That we know that among the sheriffs and the law enforcement community, this is a divided issue. Some of them are for it, some of them are against it.
All the counties that have approved our resolution as written, the county sheriffs and the county prosecutors have been in support of it. I actually drove up to St. Ignace to attend the Mackinac County, which was the first county passed it on January the 23rd. Both the sheriff and the prosecutor were there. And when asked by the commissioners, do you support us passing this? They said, absolutely, yes. The reason is that they understand that, number one, and many of them have publicly come out and said, they will not enforce any unconstitutional new laws that get passed. Now, everybody puts up the argument, well, how do you know whether a law that's duly passed, signed in the House, passed in the House, signed, passed in the Senate, signed by the governor, Randy, how do you know it's unconstitutional until it goes through the court process? Well, sometimes sheriffs and prosecutors, they have the sole discretion, the judgment, to look at a law and say, you know what, that doesn't pass muster. That doesn't pass constitutional muster with me. I believe it's unconstitutional. And if you want to get back to history, talk about the Nazis and the Nuremberg trials. Okay, those guys tried to use the defense. Well, I was just following orders. I was just following the law. I was just following what my above command was telling me to do. Did that defense work for them? No. You still have a moral responsibility in your gut to know whether or not a newly passed law like red flag laws and others, you know in your heart whether it's constitutional or not. You don't have to wait for it to go through the court process. You don't need the Supreme Court of the United States to tell you. If a guy says that basically this law is unconstitutional, I'm the county sheriff, I'm the county prosecutor, I'm not going to enforce these laws, well, then it's going to be up to the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, just like it is to the governor in New Mexico. She's threatened her sheriffs, saying if they don't enforce those newly passed red flag laws, you need to resign. And if you don't do it, I may get the National Guard to do it. Well, guess what? We're ready to have that conversation in Michigan with this governor and with these legislators and these county officials.
Well, it doesn't look like this legislature is going to move on any red flag laws, I would guess, in this term. I think both leaders have said that.
Well, that weak resolution they just passed, 227, with a vote of 75 to whatever it was, it's a weak resolution. It's not worth the paper it's written on. And it was done basically to protect the rhinos like Jack O'Malley and others that basically want to act like they're pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment, when in fact they're not. They're against our effort. Jack O'Malley has come out in all four of his counties telling the county commissioners not to pass our resolution. And that's why we're running Carolyn Cater against him in the August 4th primary. He's already facing a primary challenge over this particular issue.
Well, I can tell you, I know you should use that, and you'd be, you know, deficient if you didn't say pending in the state legislature. All that means is somebody introduced the bills. I would say it's permanently pending in the state legislature. It hasn't got a chance
but
to
Jack,
move.
But, Jack, here's the problem. This November, there's 33 open seats in our state house. Because of term limits, we don't have incumbents in 33 seats. It's going to be very difficult, I believe, for the Republicans to maintain the majority, which they have now. It's 58-52. If the Democrats are successful in repeating their motive operandi that they did in 2018, that type of campaign, they very simply, easily could perhaps take back the House. What happens on January 1st of 2021, Lee Chatfield is gone. We've got a Democrat Speaker of the House. Those bills get reintroduced, they get slammed through committee, they get passed in the House, and then it's going to be left up to Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky.
Yeah, and, so that, right and, now, that, 20, and that screeching sound you hear are the brakes in the Senate.
Excuse me, it only takes 20 senators to pass a bill. 16 are Democrats. All they got to do is pick off four weak rhinos, like Wayne Schmidt and other rhinos in the Senate, and they could very easily pass red flag laws. I'm predicting if the Democrats take back the House, we will have red flag laws in Michigan 1 year from today.
All right, we'll hold you to that.
We're going to hold you to that, Randy. Just a couple things here before we let you go.
Yes.
I wanted to say, do you think that it's safe to say that this Second Amendment sanctuary resolution that you guys are putting out has mobilized and excited the base out in northern and rural Michigan?
Not only north and rural, but across the entire state. We have got counties now with individual pages set up with 1,000, 1,400, 2,000 members. We're pushing Genesee County and Wayne County at the end of our campaign. Those will be the last two ones that we go for. And here's what's happening with this effort too. We are forming a PAC. The Michigan for Second Amendment Sanctuary Counties Political Action Committee is in the process of legally becoming a 501c4 PAC. And we are going to ask our members to donate 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, whatever they can afford. We are going to raise money for this election year. And not only are we going to take out the county commissioners that have been voting against our resolution, but we are going to be helping, supporting candidates like Tom Norton and Carolyn Cater, who have been warriors on this issue for us. And we are going to influence the election. Oh, yes, we have totally, absolutely gotten our people motivated and excited about this year's election.
And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, what did you think about the Senate rejecting Governor Whitmer's appointment, George Hartwell, to the Natural Resources Commission?
It was a no-brainer after his statements and his activities as former mayor of Grand Rapids. No way in heck. And they heard from us. A lot of our members contacted, made phone calls, sent emails, talked directly to the senators. And we told them flat out, if you ever want to even consider running for re-election or another office, you got to kick this guy out. And actually, I'm very disturbed by John Bumstead's vote. And we're thinking about possibly running somebody against him. We're not happy.
The rejection of George Hartwell. And then what did you think of Anna Mitterling? Did you guys have any opinion on that one?
She just ended up being a pawn in the political football game that was going on. Used her basically to tell Gretchen Whitmer drop Hartwell, but she didn't. And so as a result, they exercised on her. That threat was upheld, and the governor didn't believe them. And they saw what happened when they rejected him. And they'll reject every other gun-grabbing appointment she does going forward if they know what's good for him.
All right. Trucker Randy Bishop, conservative radio host up in northern Michigan. And again, tell our listeners your program and where they can find it.
Your Defending Fathers with Chuck or Randy, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, online at the website, yourdefendingfathers.com, the TuneIn app. Just download it, open, and search for WYPV. We're your patriot voice.
Thank you so much for joining us, Randy. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys. You guys have a great day.
You too. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Trucker Randy Bishop for coming in and speaking with us over Skype. That was the first time I'd ever done Skype before, John.
I think it worked pretty good. I'm interested to see how the audio turns out.
Yeah, I thought the audio was a lot better than either over the phone, over the cell phone, over the landline. It was really good.
Yes, that nice computer you got.
That was a nice computer. Yes, thank you for that. Also, thank you for my birthday cookies, too, from Emily Jane.
You should tell the audience that I encouraged Kyle to get a computer for years and years and years, and finally I just went and got him because he had an 8-year-old computer that was weighed like 15 pounds.
We're going to have to do the same thing with this Marantz, too. You've been telling me I should get a new Marantz for about 3 or 4 years. I just can't get around to getting it. So it's just going to have to show up on my desk one day.
Probably.
Angela Vasquez-Yeru, thank you so much for coming in.
You got Drew right 2 times in a row. You are nailing it on your birthday.
That is great.
Birthday. And John, start encouraging me to get this or that for a long enough time until you buy it for me.
Jack and John, and did we say Emily's cookie company name right?
We ordered some cookies for your birthday. She brought in some nice bicycle cookies. The MERS logo cookies went first. Mm-hmm. Of course, and then see what else we have in there. Shamrocks.
We had a shamrock. Tim Skubik got the microphone one.
Yes, there's another microphone in there. You got to eat later.
I don't know. I've already had two. I think that could be my limit for today.
You can have 3, 4, even 5 if you want to.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. That's going to be really hard.
You know, it is a really beautiful day out there. March 2nd. Look at that sky.
Isn't that something else?
I think it's summer almost.
I should wear a t-shirt outside. I'd be so excited.
Yeah, I'm glad it excites you.
Thank you, AT&T, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Moore. Take care.